Sooners of Oklahoma, 12-0 and still looking for respect nationwide.
What is going on, Sooner Nation? Thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Barry and Mac Show. As always, myself, Barry, personal trainer, sports performance coach out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, and alongside me, former Sooner wide receiver, 2000 national champ, Mr. Damian Mackey. How are we doing tonight, D-Mac?
It's been a minute. It's been a minute. Good to be back in the saddle. It's good to see you. I know the last time we were doing this, I think it was after the bowl game, and both of us had some big things happening in business and our personal lives that we're taking up a good portion of our time. But it is spring ball. Lots of stuff going on with the Sooners. Softball's got things going. Girls basketball,
man,
laid their hearts out. Boys basketball, Lord help us. Baseball, balling.
Yeah.
But I mean, listen, our bread and butter is football. Both of us have been hearing some things behind the scenes. I took about 2 months, to be honest with you. I took 2 months to kind of just be away. I didn't want to hear nothing. I wasn't kind of in the know. I didn't want to know nothing. I heard a couple things about some of the guys moving on, Jay Norm and CeeLo and some of the other guys. But excited about a new year. I'll say this, B, and then I'll pass it back to you. Yeah. I was in one of my alumni Facebook groups, and I said, hey, man, screw you guys. I'm a hopeful optimist, damn it. Why would I be an Oklahoma Sooner if I didn't expect us to play for championships and be the best version of ourselves? I'm not saying if the product on the field don't meet the criteria, everybody knows I'm going to tell the truth. But it's, what are we in, the last day, a couple days of March? I'm not about to piss on the season in March. I'm going to be excited. I'm looking forward to the new players. We got a new offensive coordinator. You know what I'm saying? We got a couple position groups that we need to really, you know, pick it up a little bit. But the whole reason I watched college football and was a college ball player, because at the beginning of the year, you have a chance to win. So I'm looking forward to seeing what those guys do. I've seen some things and heard some things that I really like structurally in terms of practice and just style of coaching that I think is going to pay dividends in the season.
Yeah, man, we won't waste any time. I know our OU fans, our OU faithful, those who are a part of the OUinsider.com family. And before we hop in deep in this stuff, want to remind everybody, go over, grab a membership, OUinsider, OUinsider.com. Best content in the game. If you guys want some practice notes, some information on the recruiting side, all of that, man, it is over there on OU Insider. But we're going to give you guys some nuggets here tonight too. Me and D-Mac, we got the ear to the ground. D-Mac's got his folks, the alumni. I got my handful of folks, some current players, connections. Those
players. Hey, don't be giving away the resources. They don't need to know that. They don't need to know that. Don't be giving up the sauce. Keep the sauce.
No sauce.
Secret sauce. We're not telling them what's the ingredients. Yeah.
All right.
Secret sauce.
So I want to do this. Since we last talked, OU has gone through some major, programmatic changes. Don't even know if that's a word, you know, or not, in terms of CeeLo leaving. You know, you bring in a new GM. There are things changing in the college game, D-Mac, where you're running on a salary cap now. You know, we called this back, and I'm sure many people saw this coming, but we said back when we started the podcast, this is where it was heading. It was heading to professional, unionized, CBA, sports, and the players bargaining against the programs, and that's just where it was going to go, right? You had no choice. The spirit of the rule was we're going to put a name on the jersey. What you have now is a salary-capped world where OU is still putting up numbers that are competitive with everyone in terms of the total number. And we've discussed that ad nauseum. But I just want to talk about, D-Mac, how you view OU's roster currently and how you think they've managed moving into this NFL style of program, which is what they're running now. BV said they were going that way, not only just with the training staff, which is what we had heard, you know, they were going to do things on that side a little more NFL level too, allow guys to you know, go out there and seek other people. I think last time we talked, the training thing was still a big, you know, part of discussion. But that they've since
shout out Nick Anderson running with the twos and threes at LSU. Shout out Nick Anderson, baby. I see running with the threes.
So just where do you, from the former player lens right now, a guy to kind of tuned into the program, how do you see OU having handled that now that you're in, you know, BV is fully in the swing of things. He is the man. This is no longer Riley's program. This is BV's program. How do you think the things stand?
Yeah, you know, I think BV, it's interesting, the time and period in which he came to OU. I believe he thought he had a recipe for success in the way that they ran things at Clemson, in which they was very culture-based, you know, a lot of the intangible, the whole athlete, right? They really were able to leverage that in those years when they were having extreme success. And then he comes to OU and the entire, you know, landscape of college football changes. Transfer portal goes crazy. Now there's all this, you know, this NIL income coming in. Schools are the first year, Miami and Oregon and even Texas, right, comes to mind. They're willing to spend millions of dollars or whatever they were spending. By the way, I got a story. Oh, don't let this pod in without telling a story about a kid who should be a Sooner, or I wish was a Sooner, who's not a Sooner. And I got pretty much firsthand information. So we'll dive into that.
We'll shelf that.
Yeah. We'll dive into that a little later. So a couple things happened, and I think they're good intentions, but they're unintended consequences that I think we need to immediately change. And it'll be interesting to see how Nagy handles this, because just let me just say this one. First of all, OU's at a competitive disadvantage with the current NIL structure that we possess, that we owned 2 years ago when it sounded like a good idea, by giving everybody $50,000. Do $50,000 times however many players, I think it's 105 now. Yeah. That's like $2 million, right? It's a $2 million budget for a component of college football that I believe no other school or not a lot of the big boys are having to address with every player that comes in. So I think this is the time where we say, hey, this was a philosophy that we used the first 2 years. We're no longer using that philosophy because, and you know, of course the ex-player in me has sympathy for the guys on Scholly, but a Scholly is a Scholly. It's not as if a Scholly now doesn't pay for your school. It does. The scholar, the letter of intent and the scholarship you signed still addresses all the things it addressed when I signed. The players just get this an additional 50K. And what I think needs to happen is a similar model to prior to NIL, where whatever the cost of living is, right, and meals and such, is incorporated into that scholarship. The rest of that money needs to go back into the NIL pot, because we are at a competitive disadvantage simply by nature of us promising every person who comes to OU that $50,000, everybody doesn't merit it. Some of those guys are going to take that 50K and never play for us and transfer out. Like, it just doesn't make sense in the current landscape of what's happening. And so that's something to consider. The other thing to consider is perception. And it just so happens that we got hit over their head with, right, obviously the whole Link thing was terrible and how he stripped the cupboard. BV comes in and entrusts, I would just say, in my opinion, two OCs that I don't think are OU level. When you talk about a Lincoln Riley and then, you know, the Kevin Wilson championship years and all that, you know, for my OC being Leach on to Kevin Wilson and those crews, you're talking about legendary offensive coordinators, and then Link comes in and again carries that torch. I think since then it's been, you know, subpar for our standard offensively. And then of course you've got to do a total, you know, reconstruction of the defensive side of the ball. He doesn't have time. This is a piss or get off the pot year, period. And I think that kind of lends to your initial question. I think BV says to self, my intentions were to bring in a lot of the OU greats and put them in positions to be around the program in a tangible and in a very intangible way, right? Yeah. And let those guys, you know, be examples of how the NFL component is. And Josh Norman is a very, if you know Josh Norman, he's a very loving and like morals and character guy. He was like that when we played together, right? And then you've got, you know, you've got some of these other guys in there where everybody else is cutthroat and dry business, right? Being savvy, you know, being cutthroat. I think he said, okay, we gotta move in a different direction and stop loving on everybody and having all these guys say how much they love OU but are quick to leave. And so when you put all that in the pot, the timing of what's happened, here's what I'll say to end it. I don't give a damn. There's no excuse.
Yeah.
This year, there's no excuse. I don't want to hear any excuses. We'll talk about, you know, Mateer and Buckle, Arbuckle and those guys and what they're doing offensively, which I've heard really good reviews coming out the gate. Not even so much players. I'm talking about practice structure. Some of the things they're doing is substantially different that I think are going to be beneficial. Obviously, BV, I love when he poked his chest out and said, I'm going to be the DC. That's what he's supposed to do.
I want to ask you about that. Yeah.
Put your damn nuts, you know what I'm saying, on the line and say, this is going to be, if we're going to win or lose, it's going to be because I put myself on the line. I like that. I think there's something to that. And here's the last piece. And you would know just about this as much as I have or as much as I do. I have direct contacts to current players who are like, it feels better. And, you know, thinking about the old regime and how that all played out, training and obviously the offensive side of the ball, I mean, there were just some fundamental things that just sounded like, ooh, you know, you hear and you're like, it could be biased, right? Someone's opinion could be jaded and or it could just be, you know, the purview could be a narrow scope of what the real picture is. But when you hear a lot of, you know, you see a lot of smoke, there's going to be fire somewhere. And what I'm hearing now primarily is, you know, guys are optimistic and back on the wagon of saying, hey, we're unified to go win some ball games.
Man, I love that. And we'll talk about actual players on the field, you know, success at you know, kind of going forward here. Right off the bat, you mentioned Mateer. Everything we're hearing is that he is the real deal. And if you go back to OU a year ago, DMAC, and I'll just ask it to you this way. The defense last year, there were levels of it that still has some issues, right? I think some of the NFL scouts talked about some of the issues that Danny had. Right. Danny had some issues they were even worried about. And we said this, guys, if you just want, just from a player evaluation standpoint, just the nuts and bolts, stick with this show. We were talking about Danny sometimes having those sideline to sideline issues. He could fill that A and B gap, and especially on kind of the run blitz stuff, but sometimes struggled laterally. And the NFL scouts were like, that was a potential issue. He did go and run some good times. The speed ended up being pretty good. But
the speed was great.
But I want to ask you this. With just better quarterback play a year ago, DMAC, what is OU's record?
Tennessee's competitive. I can't say we win the game because the offensive line was getting their ass kicked by their D-line. Yeah. But I mean, in the second quarter, we've got some things cooking and Jackson gives them 21 points. He gives them 21 points and you know, fumbling, going in for a touchdown, throwing a pick with no pressure we're running a jerk play. We're running action, everything this way. And we run the jerk right across the field and he throws it right to the defense. I don't want to belabor the kid. Good luck at Auburn. But Tennessee's a game that immediately comes to mind. South Carolina's a game, first quarter. We're already, again, same thing, pick six, fumbling the end zone, you know, just craziness happening. Of course, that's the pup Hawkins. There's two or three games. Missouri. Yeah.
Missouri's a win, I think. With just slightly better play, you win that game.
Missouri defense, many things could have helped us, but you're right. If your quarterback doesn't give them the game with that last possession where he just fumbles the ball and then, you know, Jacoby Johnson comes to mind because he has a pick. If people go back and watch, sorry, guys, I'm getting my soapbox already. Go back and watch it. We're in the perfect defense. And he's in the perfect position. He just loses his footing. Like he literally and he falls. It's an easy pick. And then I think the Luther or whatever his name, Burden, catches it instead. It the game's over if he doesn't fall triple of his own feet. But three wins, you know, and then to your point, what is the energy coming into this season if, let's just say we win two out of those three, right? Like, what is the energy look like? It looks substantially different. We're in a better bowl game. By the way, we could have a chance to win a bowl game, you know? So lots of things to consider, but we didn't. And I think that's the fact. And because we didn't, BV is in the position he's in now.
Yeah, and the things we've heard on Mateer is man, it's always so easy to go like Mayfield, Murray, getting these guys compared. And at the end of the day, D-Mac, everybody is their own guy, right? Matier's got his own style and way of doing things. He does have a little bit of swag. He carries himself with some confidence, which is great to see at that position. You never felt like Arnold truly had that. And so the team behind him never felt like they galvanized. You know, even behind Trevor Knight, there were moments where the team galvanized around Trevor or galvanized around Bell, you know, Oklahoma State in 13, right? When Blake Bell goes down and wins the game. So you don't have that with Arnold a year ago. You're getting that with Matier, as well as just the athleticism. We've heard that with his feet, he's really good. He's a guy who's going to extend plays with his feet and also be able to break off a few runs. How he plays in the SEC, you know, if Nussmeier is top shelf in the SEC when it comes to quarterbacks, I think Matier is going to be right there in that upper tier level, maybe just a notch below until he earns the stripes. And then another thing we've heard is Deion Burks is back, you know, really practicing. He's doing a pretty good job. I know there were questions with him not being in the bowl game, that stuff. If you're running the program like an NFL franchise, I think you're just going to run into that kind of stuff, D-Mac. That's kind of the cost of doing business. Talk a little bit about that. You know, I know you didn't, you know, play during the NIL era, so it was different, and toughness and grit were seen as a different thing. But what is your opinion on how Burks played that deal? And what you see kind of going forward versus what do you think the reality is that the players face now with so much money, life-changing money on the line?
I would say number one, short and sweet, brother, that's last season. The entire year was a cesspool. It was toxic. I mean, the receiver room was toxic. You know what I mean? I saw somebody say, X-Rob's running with the twos. X-Rob's a freshman who's they wanted him to earn his way. Nick Anderson got paid to go to another school. They don't put money in your pocket unless they expect you to be a one. LSU's got some talent at the receiver position. Kids got to go earn it. By the way, not hating on him. Want him to do well, but he got to go get it, and he'll see if the grass is greener. And we'll also see them in November. But, you know, no ill will for me from Burks. You know what I mean? That's not a game that, you know, the core group that we were playing with, some of those guys come back, but in a totally different scheme with a totally different culture, a totally different voice leading from the front in terms of your offensive coordinator and your quarterback. God forbid something crazy happens. Would I have liked to have seen him play healthy just because he was so ballyhooed in spring and came out the gates fairly good the first 2-3 games of the season? Would have been good to see what he could do. Sure. But you're right. I'm not looking at this anymore like it's, you know, student athletes. These dudes are getting paid big money. Like I said, I had a couple conversations in the last 2 months. I'll speak to a conversation. I can't speak about the kid's name, but I had a conversation about a kid who's being recruited. We're talking about $1 million annually. No, it's not a running back. No, he's not, I don't think he's considering OU very seriously, but this kid's $1 million a year NIL recipient. And, you know, just kind of give context, I own a financial firm. And so the coach is like, yo, I want you to come and talk to them about some investing opportunities or, you know, how to properly set themselves up to not, you know, waste this opportunity. But I'm like, wow, like this is real. And then, of course, I have another conversation. Listen, guys, the kids who are 4-star athletes, Barry, these guys are getting offered six figures, multiple six figures. These guys are getting offered real money with contracts and lawyers. Like, it's legit. And I am excited for them because I know what it takes to do what they do. And I know the money that is made off their backs, period. But I would like there to be some constraints and some framework put around this thing. You know, sure. I was watching something the other day, and I know I'm supposed to be speaking about Burks. Guys, I'm a little rusty. We haven't done this in a couple months.
I feel that.
But listen, I got a lot to talk about. I was reading an article and talking to some buddies, some of my high school coaching buddies, and one of my buddies, how about that? My buddy from Oregon, he's now the receiver coach for the Cowboys. Crazy. So we kicking it. When I'm in Dallas, we kicking it. And I hate the Cowboys. But do you know men's and women's football and basketball are the only contractual sports in America where there's free agency every year? You know, like if you're playing a pro sport, right, you sign a 2 or 3 year contract. There isn't free agency for all your players every year right now, right? Especially men's football, men's basketball. It's free agency every year. And I think that's an issue that needs to be addressed quickly. I don't think we can wait 2 or 3 more years, because what happens is there's artificial inflation of the market, and it's generally created by the agents. Right. And so I'm starting to learn more about, like, the actual, I don't want to hear third party stuff. I'm hearing firsthand, right? The agents are negotiating deals for guys playing basketball right now.
Yeah.
To other schools at other campuses, right? And their goal is not necessarily to get the move. Their goal is to raise the value of a guy who averages 15 points a game, right? And by the way, it's happening in football too. You're hearing, oh, if you're an all conference, you know, tackle, and these kids are playing for schools. I heard the story of two kids who are currently playing, I'm talking about football, for schools that they love, but the agent and the parents are negotiating to other places simply because of the windfall of money opportunity. And so, I just look at that, and that part kind of is a cringe. You know what I'm saying? I think something that OU doesn't get enough credit for is keeping the guys they wanted to keep. A lot of the guys we wanted to keep, we kept. And so that says something about the culture, right? The environment. Or we
the
just had guys
too, like I think they're going to get guys in the NFL,
or we don't have guys good enough that other teams want to steal. So
we'll see. Glass half empty. Oh, wow.
I'm reading a book called The Gap in the Game. That's definitely the gap, but okay. Dan Sullivan's a stud, but anyway, guys, you know, we'll see. Burks, I look forward to seeing him putting his best foot forward come fall.
Yeah, and then move over to the offensive line. Actually, before we go there, Javonte Gibson, also hearing great things, you know, about him. I think he was the only receiver, D-Mac, that we were like, yes, he's got a real shot. You know, when you watched him play, he felt more like a Hollywood when Hollywood was playing in JUCO, and you saw him and you're like, yeah, he's light, but just the athleticism is there. And with Gibson, it's more of just having that whole game, being a really good route runner, just a polished player.
If you remember verbatim, I said, we might have a problem seeing which Gibson's the better Gibson before my favorite Gibson got hurt, right? So, he's a guy whose film spoke for itself. He's come out and been a grown man for spring ball. A lot of people are excited about what his potential is.
Yeah. Also, guys, just to, you know, kind of go in on it a little bit, hearing good things about Howland. You know, a year ago, we were pretty tough on him and some of the things from a development standpoint. I know Eichard was also saying some things that you just were not seeing from a Bimbo level coach to offensive line. And it seems like some of those things have been shored up. I thought from the jump, Howland was going to be the best of the bunch. I thought he had the best intangible kind of aspects of playing the left tackle position, but also the length, the ability to put the size on that he needed. He's a guy who, if he gets the technical side right, he is a day one top 15, top 20 pick in terms of the measurables. It's can he put the rest of that stuff together? Came from that tight end position, just a really strong game overall. But one of the things I wanted to ask you about, D-Mac, because we haven't talked since the announcement was made, I will say I've heard a few things on this. I want to talk about Kanick, because he is a guy who we were very hard on at the linebacker position, going back to when BV first got into Norman. He has switched over to tight end. It's a position of great need. And we always said, man, he's great. You know, if he's got a straight line, he's running in. He is an athletic young man who can, you know, really pick him up and put him down, as they say. And his physicality in certain aspects lends well to that position. Talk a little bit about your perspective of him switching from defense to offense, some of the nuances of that, and then him being kind of vocal. This is maybe what I want myself and other fans on here to really get the insight on. He was pretty transparent about that backer position being hard for him to learn. And you said the thing that separates Kip Lewis from Kanick and Carter from Kanick, even though Carter's not here anymore, we were still saying it back then, and even a Stutzman to some degree, was the fluidity of having played that position at all those different levels and devoting time to being a linebacker and then having to go into a Venable system and not have those basics down. Talk about that.
Yeah, kudos to him for keeping it real. I mean, it took about half of his freshman season when he was forced into play because we had a ton of injuries. White goes down and DU is a guy who's sitting his feet in quicksand. Kids got to play. You're excited after the Nebraska game. I remember vividly. We're excited. Oh, man, I think it's West V and Norman, I believe, is the game where, or it's Baylor. It's either West V or Baylor. And you just see, I'm not going to cuss, like holy mackerel, true freshman, right? So you're like, okay, maybe, you know, the game is just extremely fast, but just some very simple keys. As a guy who played defense my entire career until I got to college, and safety essentially is like a middle backer position at the third level. You're inside out, your reads are the uncovered guards, right, to the tackle. There's a lot of reads you make at safety and run game that are very similar to a middle backer fit. I mean, I was just like, yo, he's missing simple stuff. And so for that to not improve, but for also us to start recruiting and developing better guys, Kit puts on weight, right? You've got the puppy coming in from Lubbock, who's now entrenched now, and then Carter and the other guys, Samuel. Kudos to him for being honest. And I got to tell you, go back and watch the senior high school film. Dude with the rock is legit. So for all of my honest critiques, and I, you know, people used to get pissed at me, but I'm just telling the truth, guys. Like, you say, very early on in film, you can see some of the things, like RSJ comes to mind. Kip Lewis comes to mind. They're all freshmen, all three of those guys. And I'm like, Barry, that kid's got something. If you remember the Texas game, we're getting our asses kicked, yeah, and RSJ showing us something. Kip Lewis is showing us something. Kanick is a guy, firsthand information. Guys don't like him because he is an issue, a factor. He's going to make a difference at the tight end position. I'm not going to say he's all conference. I'm not crazy. And I don't think he's an inline guy. I don't think he's a guy we can line up on a weak side DN, you know what I'm saying, and hope that he's going to be able to block on action if we call tight coverage where this tight end stays in. He's going to get his behind kick because his arms aren't long enough and his reach isn't big enough. But he's a guy. If we got bunch formations, and he's stacked off of a tackle off the line of scrimmage, and he can motion in and motion out. He's a guy who can go across the formation and wham block. Linebackers know hand placement better than anybody except offensive linemen.
That's a great point.
It's linebackers. Mm-hmm. Linebackers know where to put their hands. They always have to keep their hands free. And I believe, I don't know Arbuckle stuff, but it's not like how I could dissect a Leach offense or a Link offense, because those or even Buddy at Mississippi State, the bones are the stuff that I learned 25 years ago. I don't know Arbuckle stuff yet. I'm going to have to really dive into the film. But what I do know is a sniffer, an off the line tight end position where you're running across the formation, either behind the line of scrimmage or in passing routes. I'm just telling you, the kid's a legit 4.4, 4.5. The kid's a legit 6.2. And he does have a history of catching the ball and having it in his hands as an offensive player. That is what he naturally played when he played football at the high school level. I wouldn't be surprised, guys, if he makes some plays and does some things and has some natural attributes that are going to be able to reveal themselves. Because when you're talking about a linebacker, you'd prefer a linebacker be a better football player than athlete. And then the plus is a football player who's also an athlete, right? Roquan Smith comes to mind. Fred Warner comes to mind, right? Buddy from Carolina years ago, who used to Patrick Willis. And I forgot the guy, white dude from Carolina, was a beast for the Panthers. Great athlete playing backer. Offense, you want an athlete because they create mismatches. Defenses have to go into different coverages. He might be a guy that when he's on the field, they got to go to nickel. And if he can block well enough, then he's got to block a little safety versus a backer. That's a big deal for us. So it'll be interesting to see how much of the offense he picks up. I know you had some tidbits about some of the nuances of what he's doing in the pass coverage, or excuse me, as a pass receiver. I'll look at that on film when I get a chance, or if I make it down to Norman and see a scrimmage. But I just know firsthand from people, not and players, I'm a cuss. Kanick's a motherfucker. Yeah. I gotta tell you, he's out there playing football against his teammates, and you need a little bit of that. Yeah. You need a little bit of that. So I'm okay with it.
Yeah, it was in the long run, it's going to be a good move for him. I know the easy comparison is what we saw Blake Bell do. Again, the second Blake Bell mentioned on this pod, I think that's some kind of record. But Bell did it well enough to be playing in the NFL for a decade plus, right? And he just was an athlete who had the right measurables. I don't think Kanick has that Blake Bell frame. Right,
6'5".
Yeah, but Bell was in a different stratosphere in terms of that. He was already built like an NFL tight end when he got to Norman. But Kanick can still make an impact. He's a guy who is going to have his number called during the season. I want to move over to defense, D-Mac. You know, last year we talked about the most important thing, particularly defensively, and you already kind of alluded to it. Was the retention of the guys that you had. You had to be able to keep your stones, right? You had to be able to keep your RMTs, your guys who were going to be making a difference. And that is honestly keeping an RMT with what he was able to do and actually win you games, right? That's the equivalent of keeping a Myles Garrett. Right. Of keeping a sweat, of keeping, you know, insert any edge rushing defender. We know in the NFL, those guys are so highly valued. If you don't have what we just saw in the Super Bowl, if you don't have edge rushers who can get to the quarterback, you're not winning the whole thing. It just does not happen. It bears out year after year after year. And OU was able to do that. You're also able to go out and pick up a Kendall Daniels, right? Who we were hearing some pretty good things about. He's a guy who's built really well, built for this new age of football. He is, in my opinion, a guy who doesn't look too dissimilar from a McCullough, from a Deson, but the lower half, the feet.
Oh yeah,
it's a different ball game, guys. Daniels is the kind of guy who could play in space at the NFL level, right? Not saying he's a starter every snap, but he is a guy. Deson's going to have a hard time getting to that.
Hey, let me speak to that.
Go for it.
Deson never showed on film at Indiana that he could play in space. Deson never showed on film at OU that he could play in space. Aside from coming forward, he was a beast. Laterally or sinking, trouble. Kendall Daniels has shown it since his freshman year that he could play in space.
Yeah.
Kendall Daniels can cover the hole. He can sink. He can drop into the curl. He can buzz the flats. He can do all that. He can read screen and attack the ball. Like, he's a guy who, I don't want to, this might sound bad, but I'm just going to keep it 100. Like, he could have been our best middle back. He could have been our best linebacker last year. Him and Danny would have covered up both. Mm-hmm. Him and Danny together would have been extremely dangerous, because he's a bigger, girthier Kip, because Kip has a really high IQ. I don't know Kendall Daniels, like 40. Kip's a really fast guy, straight line fast guy too, but Kendall Daniels knows how to get to the spot. Kendall and Stutz would have been a problem last year. He could be our best backer right now. Listen, from what I've been told, he could be the best backer. Kip's the leader. Kip's a third year, not necessarily starter, but impact player for the defense, and he hasn't shown any fall off. So Kip's going to be, Kip's your proverbial SEC backer. Like, this Kip this season is going to look exactly like the studs of the SEC, Georgia, I don't know, Bama. They usually have these bigger guys, but like a Georgia, Tennessee, like Kip's going to look exactly like one of those guys. Cause I mean, you know, he's got his grown man strength. Finally, Kendall Daniels is what I've been told, balling, and is a guy who absolutely positively respects the film room. Was that a public quote, or is that something I heard privately? Was it publicly stated that he wasn't coached well at Oklahoma State, or is that something that, am I exposing something that I was told in confident?
So I actually don't remember. I haven't heard that specifically, and I was looking at some of the quotes he said, but I have not. I know someone at Oklahoma State, I will say, that has kind of alluded to that, or maybe not that it was poor coaching, but that there was poor connection and the ability to get the message across from the coaching side. Talk about that.
Nah, I maybe, I don't know. That's not what I was told. I was told they had they had a, what was our DC's name when Link was here? What's that guy's name?
Oh, Grinch.
one of those. Hey, just go get the football. What? Like, hold on, bro. Hold on, bro. We're not talking down the distance. We're not talking two back versus one back. We're not talking blitz personnel. Like, he said that he literally in the like last 2 months has learned more about the nuances of being a second level defender than he did in 2 or 3 years at Okie State, yeah. Okie Light. And I don't know if that's an indictment on the program or not. What I do know is he is going to have the development necessary to be successful in the NFL because BV's defense is going to teach him everything he needs to know, all the nuances he needs to have, right? And make sure he's a guy more marketable to teams because he won't be such a raw project going into the NFL. I have a couple people who, again, I haven't had a chance to get to town. I get a lot of updates and feedback. And I mean, essentially what he was saying to some of his teammates is essentially like, yo, they didn't teach us this at Oklahoma State. You know, they might have taught us strong. And, you know, these are my keys. If back comes to me, these are my keys. If back goes away, if I see pass and or action, I'm supposed to dip into this hole. And that was pretty much it. And I said, wow. So he might even improve. It'll be interesting to see how much development we see from him. Or really just production, right? I don't think this is a development deal for him. How much production we see from him, sky's the limit. Dude's yeah. a guy who's a team guy. He's a plus athlete. I don't know if he's as great an athlete as Kip, but he's a plus athlete. And they say he'll put his shoulder pad dead in your chest. So looking forward to seeing what he can do.
Yeah, I think he's a guy who he adds so much length to that defense that was already, you know, teetering on being one of the better defenses in the SEC, right? We talked about at the beginning of the show, you pair that defense with an offense that can consistently convert on third down, convert in the short yardage, separate, right? When you're up 10, get up 17, right? How much of a difference does that make for the defense? And creating what we saw in the Alabama game, right? There was a time where Bama had a shot, and then OU just kept making the plays to separate. One of the guys who I want to go into, Eli Bowen, was a big part of that, and seems like he is going to continue to be an impact player for Oklahoma. Hearing good things about him. A youngster we're hearing about a little bit is Cortland Guillory. I was incredibly high on him. I thought, to me, he was the most NFL ready guy in this last recruiting cycle from a freshman standpoint. And now, you know, DMAC, when you're bringing in players at this point, and for even in the high school ranks, you're trying, maybe you got one or two projects, but you're trying to bring in guys that can play. You're trying to bring in guys who can add value to your team because you know that next year could have a totally different squad. So you need as many impact players. And it seems like he's doing that. I loved his explosiveness. He was a guy who could jump off of 2 feet, jump off of 1 foot. He could break on the ball. And these are things that Bowen has developed, right? So some of it was he just had to get stronger. He had to mitigate some of that size issue. But now OU has guys on that side of the ball, you know, hopefully a healthy Gentry. And then on the back end, right, RSJ, you're going to have Peyton back there. The OU is still going to be loaded. And I'll say this. And DMAC, I'm going to pass it to you. From a talent standpoint, OU has added some NFL level guys, or has guys now who are going to be reaching NFL draft pick rounds 1 through 4 type levels, right? Your Kips, your Daniels, your RSJs, your RMTs. If RMT was like 2 inches taller, you're talking about a monster on draft day, and he still is going to get a shot, right? He just might have to go to the right fit. But talk a little bit about in this day and age now, you got to make your team talented. You got to have a roster for that year that is really good. Talk about that.
Yeah, you know, there was a great conversation going on OU Insider the last couple of days about position groups that were the most concerning. And shout out to one of the insiders on the board, Bran. I don't know his entire name. By the way, brings a ton of knowledge, clearly is connected and has been providing a ton of value on the page. But they were speaking to, you know, what position groups are the biggest concerns on the team. And initially there were people saying the center, which I think having one college ready center is always problematic. And people were talking about some of the things we could do to address that. And then corner, right? With Eli obviously being out for spring, I don't know if he's going to be out for the entire spring, but Eli's out. And then of course, Gentry being held out, Kanai and some of those other guys graduating and or transferring out may have been addition by subtraction. But I honestly, I said, I don't have as much concern about corner as I do running back. And I'll park that and get back to that because I want to speak to what you just spoke to. The reason I don't have as much concern about corner is because a decade ago, OU had a stable full of either 5'11", short-armed, looked like me, corners, but they ran 4.6. Or they had 6'1", looked like safeties, and they couldn't get out of their hips, right? Corners. That's you know, and then we'd have like one or two, like Big 12 college-ready corners, right? We'd have one or two of those guys, and everybody else is 5'9", 5'10", or 4'6" guy, or safety playing corner, or like some kind of athlete trying to learn the position. We don't have that issue. We've recruited well at the position, right? First of all, you've got two SEC caliber starters right now, right? If we get Eli back and he's healthy, he's proven as a true freshman, he can man down that position. And it obviously, Gentry, I see a lot of people in the comments saying the same. If that boy stays healthy, he's a first round draft pick with the measurables, the talent, and the film he's produced in big games. So when I think concern, right, I think of multiple issues. Now you talk about Guillory, you talk about Newcomb, you talk about, right, some of these other puppies. We don't have the everybody's 5'10", 178, 184. We've got 6'1", long arms, 4'4", 196, 201, Jacoby Johnson. I mean, we've got three dudes who they need to develop. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in that thread, I said, hey, for me, and I'm just taking my opinion in this regard, cornerback is more of an unknown. It's not that big a concern to me because if you got five or six guys who have the requisite skills, you got to develop two or three. And we got all the way until August. Really, we've got through September, week one, week two, right? You've got time to develop those guys, right? You got Baby Hawkins, you're right. We got some guys on that side, right? You guys are naming some of the other guys. Running back, okay? Running back is a concern for me for two reasons.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that.
Oh, two. I mean, everybody in Oklahoma knows these two reasons. Reason number one is everybody who's coming back had an opportunity last year and Sands take out the true freshman. None of those guys could break and make a play in SEC football.
100%.
Those guys can't make guys miss, run through traffic, and or make a big play. None of them showed the ability to do it. I'm not going to talk smack about guys. It's not the season for that. X-Rob comes in. In his first game, all of a sudden, Alabama can't tackle him, right? So you got a freshman that you think you got something there, but I don't know that he's a guy we want to be the bell cow coming out the gates. But then you got the other problem, and legacy or not, recruiter or not, OU grade or not, I don't know what the hell Coach Murray be doing with his rotations. You've got Sawchuk, the first series of the bowl game, 60 yards, touchdown. He breaks a 30-yard touchdown, and then he gets like five carries the rest of the game. How? You everyone who has two eyeballs that work watched Howie Walker be the best running back the year before. And I just think of so many games. I'm thinking of Oklahoma State that year. We lose that game. Howie's moving the chains. I'm thinking of KU, the KU game 2 years ago. We lose that game. And Tawi's a guy where it's like he's getting momentum and then we sit him and, oh, shit, things are messing up again. Put him back in. Right. That's coaching. That's rotation. It's problematic.
Yeah,
it's problematic. And I mean, sorry. You know what I'm saying? You know, oh, Mackie, I'm just telling the truth. I don't know what the heck coach is doing. And I don't have to know, right? Like if we're winning and it's working, it's not for me to critique in order for us to get the right or wrong answer. But guys, dang it, when it's not working, people are going to ask questions. And yes, I wear this. I don't have my ring on. It's over there. But I did the same thing he did, and I happened to win an Addy. I'm going to tell the freaking truth. It ain't good enough. It ain't good enough. You know what I'm saying? Like, by the way, Joe John, it ain't good enough. He another Sooner. It ain't good enough, bro. Like, I think you sent some of the same information I got. Like, how we got three or four transfers and ain't none of them good? What? How is your only high recruit, your only prospect you have that's a highly regarded recruit is a kid who's coming because the quarterback, Hawkins and Mitchell? Brother, you know, I will say when he took over for Seth, the offense got a nice little blip. It improved a little bit for a little bit. But, bro, we need you to come and be a value add to the offense. And so concerns, running back and tight end are concerns for me. I think the tight end position you can be hidden in this offense. There's ways to go three wide and two back and different things to hide that tight end issue. But running back, problematic. Corner, there's a lot of unknowns. You guys named some of the other freshmen that I didn't even mention. We've got the body types and skill sets and talent or athleticism that's needed. They just need to be coached up. I'd much prefer to be in that issue at the cornerback position than to have running backs who are 3 or 4 years into the program. And Barnes' claim to fame is this 80-yard touchdown against whoever the hell we played week 9, who, you know, he had a 200-yard day. What's the day? Who do we play? Sisters of the Poor Handkerchief A&T School for the Blind and Deaf. That's who we played. And kudos to him for getting it done that Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I was going to kind of save that for the end, so this is perfect. I'm worried about the running back position, D-Mac. I think it can potentially lose you games this year. If the offensive line is better, and we think it's going to be, all signs point to it, you know, if last year it was a 5.5 and this year it's a 7, right? It's going to be, and I think for some games I'm being kind of kind on the 5.5. That's just like straight average across the board for the SEC. But not having a running back who can find the hole, and which is really what we saw with X-Rob. Keep your eyes up, keep your feet, find the hole. These are things that can be coached on that we've seen none of the other guys develop. And at a certain point, when you watch the same things in the film, and I watched a scout quote this about Barnes, and I cannot remember where I saw it. They said, he is potentially an NFL slashing type back if he could keep his eyes up. In the right system, he can get downhill, but he cannot keep his feet and he doesn't keep his eyes up. And that's a massive problem. And that is your vision. Just being able to see, process the data, and do what you need to do. Running back, you are making split-second decisions, right? You have a designation of where to go. And then once you're out of that, that's what X-Rob did so well. That's what Pirine did so well. And these guys play so fast at times. And the game has not seemed to slow down. And what do you want your coaches to be able to do, D-Mac?
Yeah. Hold on.
Go for it.
Barry, you're so nice. Barry said, a scout just said Barnes would be an amazing running back if he could do what running backs are supposed to be able to do. Keep your eyes up, hit the hole. That's what running backs are supposed to do.
That is kind of wild.
If he can only slash and hit the hole. That's what we want him to do.
That's it. And X-Rob came in and was able to do it. At a certain point, you know, where do you say it's a coaching and development issue? And I think at a certain point, you have to say that when you see other positions getting developed, you see other positions, guys getting better, right? You know, how many position coaches have we had at the linebacker spot? And I know BV is kind of the constant there, but you could even go to safety and you could say those guys have gotten better. RSJ has gotten better. Eli Bowen last year, from when he first stepped on the field to the end of the year, he got better. Logan Howland, from the middle of the year when he was having issues with footwork, he got better. By the bowl game, he was looking pretty good. And at a certain point, you have to say, well, how much do you put the onus on the coach. And I mean, what other position, D-Mac, on OU's roster outside of tight end has been fortunate to retain or unfortunate to retain so many of their guys? Right?
No, 100%.
The portal has not impacted running back or tight end at all. They still got the same guys, man. So I just think it's interesting. You know, but before we get out of here, I do want to get your thoughts on this, and maybe this will go up in a short. We'll put some of those up here on YouTube for you guys. Post on the Instagram. If you guys don't follow the Instagram at The Barry and Mac Show, post the shorts over there and shorts on the YouTube channel, The Barry and Mac Show. And we're also over there on OUinsider.com. Go make sure you you take a look on that side. But Gundy was asked, Mike Gundy, not Kale Gundy, the artist formerly known as running backs, inside receivers coach, Kale Gundy.
Recruiting coordinator.
Much beloved Oklahoman by many. But Mike Gundy of the Oklahoma State Cowboys said that he would not mind seeing a spring home and home between OU and OSU, charge $25 a head, give the money to the NILs respectively, just split it. What do you think about doing something like that, D-Mac? If the spring games are going to just go away and be gone, which I don't think we're ever going to see them come back, right? You might see like more of an open practice style the way the NFL does it, right, where they do some of these like OTAs or whatever, and they have crowds come in and watch. I know Dallas does. A lot of NFL teams do, and I think to some extent they're required to have so many be open to the public. But what do you think of something like that?
So a couple of things come to mind. I think they come back when multiple year contracts come back for college football. Like I said, if you're recruiting your guys every year, it doesn't, and there's a portal season after spring, it just doesn't make sense to showcase your guys for people to steal them in the portal. So I think it's smart to not do it right now. I am totally okay with not doing that. Now, to Mike Gundy's analogy, let me ask you a question, Barry. Do you think it would be wise for Nike to say, hey, let's do a 50% split profit sharing with LA Gear?
You don't even know
what LA Gear is. No. You're not even old enough to know who the hell LA Gear is. Exactly. Well, why the hell would we ever profit share 50% with Oklahoma State? Are you freaking crazy?
Yeah.
The damn school who can't even sell out their 47,000 seat stadium unless they're playing us. Why would we ever do a 50% profit share with those dumbasses? What would happen is it needs to be a home and home in Norman every time. Yeah. OSU should be able to sell tickets to the place, and we sell tickets to the place, and everybody who comes for OSU gets to go in OSU's pocket, and everybody who comes for Norman gets to come in our pocket, and our season ticket holders get first dibs. There's no way I'm doing those guys a favor. No, hell no, no. It's in Norman every year. Your tickets go for $5. Our tickets go for $25. All the proceeds from our tickets go in our pocket. 50% of the proceeds from your ticket goes in our pocket. And you guys thank us for giving LA Gear a second opportunity. Because guess what? I don't want to be rude. I don't want to be mean. But their angel investor, I'm pretty sure he passed away.
Yeah.
And yeah.
No longer around.
Let me tell you something, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but I think I heard, again, I'm in some financial circles, I heard they created a trust to make sure there's going to be funds from the things that he established to make sure the programs don't just fall back into the dumpster. Yeah. So yeah. I think that's pretty smart. But Mike Gundy is he's trying to do economics 101, bro. Well, he ain't doing, I don't know what Oklahoma A&M's econ school of business is like, but it ain't better than ours. The Price School of Business is chopping their shit to pieces. So hell no. We're not doing a 50% profit share with their crazy behinds. The entire OSU conglomerate would come to that game trying to win the Super Bowl. They would probably try to hurt us. They would probably try to do some illegal things. You know what I'm saying? Like, are you kidding me? No, that's not an option for us. Sorry, you guys are little bro, and just economically, you're not in our hemisphere. The answer is no. But can I say something else?
Go for it.
Salute to them. This is all I'm gonna say. I'm gonna keep it short and sweet. Salute to them for keeping their word as it relates to recruiting in-state players who just happened to have fathers who are legacies at the University of Oklahoma. I will give OSU credit for keeping their word and doing things the correct way when it comes to recruiting in-state studs from Oklahoma, and fathers just happen to be legacies at OU. Not going to speak any more to it than that. I had a pretty disheartening conversation from the horse's mouth. No secondhand information. And at OU, we got to do better. I will say that. We got to do better.
Man. Yeah. And it's just going to be that we will talk about it as the spring wanes on, as we get to summer, right? We're going to kind of chop it up. And we guys, last year we did summer conditioning. We'll come up with something this year in terms of kind of a series that we'll run to give you guys some insight on some different things, right? For those who don't know, I know we got some new listeners. I work with athletes, gen pop, everybody and the like, folks with disabilities up here in the Tulsa area from a training and sports performance perspective. And DMAC, you guys know his history, you know, as a Sooner and his football mind when it comes to this. I know some people have clamored for DMAC to be OC, or at least be a part of the staff, especially last year, man, with how things went. So we will come up with something for you guys, to keep bringing you all the entertainment this year. I just want to thank everybody who has stuck with us. The folks who are happy to see us back. Some of the folks who maybe not so happy, who cares, right? As long as you're still watching, enjoying and interacting, with the content. DMAC, before I pass it to you, as we traditionally do to close out the show, I want to just, let everybody know a lot of things are going on at a government level when it comes to certain funding getting cut for different programs, right? I'm sure a lot of people on here are familiar with the DOGE program, and this isn't a political statement. What this is a statement just to remind you guys that, you know, one of the reasons that program exists is to make our country a little more frugal, be a little more thoughtful with where those expenses are going. But it is also to steel man and justify the programs that need to be getting funding, right? The programs that do need the federal grants and the federal aid money. So I just want to, you know, from a local standpoint, and I know DMAC would probably totally agree with me on this, in the area that you live in, keep your ear to the ground with what's going on. And if something is important to you or seems important, find out about it. And man, work your best to validate and help that remain as a citizen of that area. You know, I'm going through and seeing some things in the space that I work in, you know, and people not being advocated for, particularly people with disability, from a government standpoint, and things that are really important potentially get cut. But we want to see those programs stick around and that money go to the right spot. But didn't mean to get political on here, DMAC. I want to,
Hey bro, I'm gonna need you to DM me the story behind that. There's a story. I want to know it. Yeah. So shoot me the info. I'm intrigued.
I will let you know. It's big time. I may end up in the Capitol building in Oklahoma City. Possibly. It's big deal. So,
okay.
I will let you know, but, DMAC, as always, closing thoughts as we start up this journey in the 2025 season, man.
I'm calling us out once a week minimum. I'm calling us out once a week minimum. Damn it. We got to get to once a week minimum. So I know our schedules. Guys, I am all over the country all the freaking time. But I you guys remember that one time we did the episode and I was in Atlanta and the theme was going doot in the background. Like, yo, I'm not at home. Somebody's alarm. I mean, obviously, as an ex-educator and some of the, you know, transformational changes that are happening with the Board of Education and all that stuff. And I have hosts of friends who are administrators, superintendents, teachers, all the way up the gamut. I will say I'm super grateful that God put me in a position to transition into entrepreneurship because it has no impact on my personal business now. Grateful for that. But yeah, you know, it'll be interesting to see how things play out the next couple of years. The parties, dude, I mean, just in case anybody's wondering, like, I am I listen. I listen to the issue, and I make a conscious and critical decision. I'm not a, what are they, donkeys and elephants? Is that what the two are? Is that what they
yeah.
are?
I don't, yeah.
Okay, whatever.
Both blue, of those red. Suck.
Yeah, yeah, cool. They, although blue is my favorite color. Which one's blue? Democrats or Republicans?
Democrats.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah.
My mama. They got my mama. My mama's a staunch Democrat. My dad was a staunch Republican. So there's that. Just for us. Let me get out the politics. Just for us. Let's hold our word and get to once a week. Yeah. I saw somebody asking about Manny Choice and the other puppy. The receivers, both of them are showing a lot of promise. I think, yeah. Again, the body type. They're SEC body type guys who are going to be able to go out there and be really aggressive. It'll be interesting to see what Tatum does playing baseball. You know, I don't know if he's switching back and forth or if he's full-time baseball right now. Guys, I'll say this, and I said this on OU Insider. And by the way, I don't give a damn how you feel. Every spring, I'm going into the fall optimistic, period, especially if there's reason to be optimistic. I don't want to hear all these negative Nancys, we suck, this and that, blah, blah, blah. Like, we had a lot of changes. We had the best portal quarterback come in, and quarterback was one of the biggest issues we had. We had one of the best offensive coordinators come in, and our offensive scheme was absolutely atrocious last year. We had a ton of freshmen have to play, and freshmen turn into sophomores on the offensive line. And so as I look at our team, and you talk about keeping our Mason Thomas, you talk about, even though Billy Bowens leaves, but you've got entrenched starters at safety. You talk about, even though Daddy Stetsman's leave, you've got entrenched leaders at backer, right? You talk about two true freshmen in Stone and my boy Jackson at the D tackle positions. Like, you talk about Marvin Jones coming in, Kendall Daniels coming in. Guys, I don't believe, I'm not going into fall saying, oh, we're going to have a decent bull crap. I expect us to have a dominant defense, and I expect us to have a much improved offense who can score the damn football and move the chains. Period. We are Oklahoma. I don't give a damn about the SEC. The SEC is Georgia, Bama, and everybody else. Any other school besides Georgia or Bama in the Big 12 the last decade would have had the same similar record to us. None of those other schools over the course of a decade have shown that they are a better program than us. I'm not going in there ducking nobody. I'm not going in there dodging nobody. Chest out, interlocked OU. We got some of our issues addressed. Now, come September, we look Rudy Poo. I'm going to be the first one to say we look Rudy Poo. But we in March, about to be April. No way in heaven I'm going to be walking around my lip on the floor, sad. Coach BV, we got your back, bro. Go make it happen. Position coaches, do your dang jobs. Coordinators, create simplicity and a framework so that the players understand what to do. All right? And Joe C, put us in position to win. Like, that's where I'm at right now. And so I'm looking forward to assessing the team. I'm going to do a deeper dive into all of that stuff after spring football. Check us out on OU Insider. I try to poke my head in there every couple of days just to check in and see how things are going. But expect us to continue to bring the value. Expect us to bring a different lens. We're not a part of the university, so we can say what the heck we want to. And I plan to do so with the lens of education. I'm not going to be reckless and ignorant.
Yeah.
But yeah, man. Appreciate you guys for jumping on with us tonight.
Absolutely. Guys, go follow us on social media on Twitter. DMAC is D_Mac13. Follow me at BYS Fitness, at letter BWISE Fitness. And follow the show on YouTube. Comment, like, share the shorts, do all that. I want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight, and we will see you soon. And